Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is Thursday, September 20th, 2012. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Tonight, we've got Jeffrey Smith talking about Genetic Roulette, the name of his book, his new DVD, and his website, Genetic Roulette. In fact, the new DVD he's allowing to be run for free this week. You can find it at his website. I cannot recommend it to you highly enough. We pre-recorded our interview with Jeffrey while I was out at the Michael Fields Agricultural Institute in East Troy, Wisconsin. Now I'm in California, so is Jeffrey. He's working tirelessly in support of Proposition 37 on the state ballot in November. If you live in California, you want to vote yes for Proposition 37. You can learn more about it at the blog, and there's lots of information available on the website and at Jeffrey's site. If you don't live in California, you still care tremendously, because if California can achieve labeling of GMOs, then we can get it throughout the country, and that's important. Also coming up in California, I'll be speaking in the San Francisco Bay Area over the next few months. Next week, I'm speaking in Berkeley on Thursday. This is Financial Salons for Changing Times. I'll be with the C-Lane Advisory Team. So Berkeley next week, next Thursday on September 27th, Menlo Park on September 29th, Sebastopol on October 20th, Santa Cruz on November 14th. Then I'm going back to Tennessee for October 12th to 14th, Transformations and Renewals, and then over to Holland for the Global Breakthrough Energy Movement Conference. You can check out the events site section at either Salieri.com and for the C-Lane ones, both Salieri and C-Lane Advisory. And don't forget our next subscriber luncheon in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, right next to Nashville. Our theme tonight is QE3 Rocks Your World. And I wanted to talk a fair amount tonight about QE3 rather than go through a sort of a detailed roundup in money and markets, because I think the QE3 announced by the Fed last week is just going to be it's going to impact all of us. It's going to be very important. And interestingly enough, what I've been finding over the last week is there's a lot of spotty knowledge about what this is and what it means. So I really want to focus on that. It is the big news of the week, and it's going to make an enormous difference to events over the next year. What is quantitative easing? Quantitative easing is simply a process by which a central bank injects significant amounts of money into the money supply. Typically, it's a little bit like financial steroids, where ultimately the only guys who are better off at the end of the day are the ones who make and sell the steroids. But clearly, the Fed is expanding the money supply. The definition of inflation is one, is very simple. When the money supply increases, it is said to inflate. When the money supply decreases, it is said to deflate. Now, central bank action is not the only thing that can inflate or deflate a money supply. The velocity of money, so as money is injected into the banking system and the banking system lends and people feel bullish about the economy, you'll see something called the multiplier effect, which means more money is passing hands, and that can increase both the leverage in the banking system, and then the activity in the general economy can increase the money supply. So you can see the central bank increasing the money supply, but other things going on in the economy, whether it's the banks not lending or people not circulating, can offset and decrease the money supply. Now, what is the particular kind of quantitative easing that the Fed engaged in last week? We've had, from the time of the bailout, we've had what's called QE1, then QE2, and now this is referred to as QE3. QE3 is fundamentally different than QE1 and QE2 in that the Fed has not put a limit on what they're going to do. They are not saying we're going to stop at such and such a time, or we're going to stop at $700 billion. They say we're going to buy $40 billion a month of mortgage securities, presumably from the big banks, the Fed member banks, and I suspect Fannie and Freddie as well. And we're going to keep doing it until we stop. One of the things they're doing, very unusual, is tying it to the unemployment rate. So they're saying we're going to keep doing this until we're not worried about unemployment anymore. And I'll talk a lot about that in a second. Now, what do I think they're really doing? I just published an article early this week called QE3, If You're in the Real Estate Market, You Need to Pay Attention. And I describe, it's up on the blog, you can read it, and it's linked from the subscriber links in tonight's blog post. What I describe is what I think is happening, which is the Fed has decided that it is going to once and for all extinguish all mortgage fraud, buy it all up in the market, and in the process extinguish all criminal liabilities and also protect sovereign governments and institutional investors from around the world from losing money on the mortgage fraud, let alone bringing actions, whether it's nuclear attacks or actions in the courts complaining about the fact that they were sold AAA mortgage paper and what they got instead was something that was fraudulently issued and fraudulently issued with the blessings of the U.S. government and the central bank. So this is a cleanup action, and I think what the Fed is really saying is we're going to keep buying this toxic paper and pulling it off of the balance sheets of the banks, pulling it off the balance sheets of Fannie and Freddie, and pulling it off of the balance sheets of wherever it is until it's extinguished. Now, why would they want to do that? One of the reasons they want to do that is so the market can clear. Right now, a great deal of the U.S. real estate market is frozen because you have houses and real estate underwater, but you also have a whole world of things that can't mark to market, and that's because there's so much fraud and so much criminal liability involved. Now, one of the $64,000 questions is, will any of these benefits pass from Fannie Freddie, pass from the big banks to mortgage holders, whether it's on commercial real estate or residential real estate, who are in the process of workouts or in foreclosure? My guess is yes, but it's too early to tell. No doubt, if it happens, it's a lock on the election for the Democrats this year, because so much money will flow through. If you flow through enough to clear the market at the workout and foreclosure level, whether it's clearing the market by forcing the foreclosures through because the banks can afford for that to happen, or because you're spreading enough money around and sort of allowing people to walk away from their mortgages and other kinds of indebtedness. Either way you clear the market, you allow a mark to market, and you do it in a way that extinguishes, as I said, the criminal liabilities. What that means is the $27 trillion plus dollars that have been pulled out of the economy are now free to flow back in to into the U.S. economy and start to accumulate large amounts of real estate, which I think they already have, particularly have started to do with respect to farmland, but can do it with respect to everything. Now, the thing that makes Bernanke's tying this to unemployment so politically brilliant and really so vicious is that to date, the way that we have offset the inflation that comes, the monetary inflation that comes from quantitative easing and loose monetary policy, is with labor deflation. So you've heard me talk many times about the slow burn. And in fact, what the slow burn is, a process by which you create monetary inflation and offset it with labor deflation. Now, what do I mean by that? For many years, you'll always see me get in debates with people all around the financial blogosphere and in the financial press. They say, we're going to have a collapse. I say, no, it's going to slow burn. They say, we're going to have hyperinflation. I say, no, it's going to slow burn. The way you avoid collapse is essentially by printing money and stealing assets. You know, that's what Iraq and Afghanistan is. And the way you avoid hyperinflation is by labor devaluation. So, for example, during the 1990s, we dramatically shifted jobs and manufacturing out of the United States and started to compete countries where people were working for a dollar an hour against labor in the first world. So we pitted third world labor against first world labor, and we're rebalancing labor and labor prices globally, and that's a dramatic shift between the value of labor and the value of capital, very much in the favor of capital. So that dramatically devalued labor. The second thing is we introduced new technology, and in part the globalization was possible as a result of the new technology. But whether replacing people with machines or streamlined process that information technology allows, what you're doing is, again, dramatically reducing the cost and value of labor. Finally, we've been engaging in increasing levels of depopulation. When you depopulate, you destroy demand for goods and services and natural resources. So whether it's organized crime bringing drugs into a community, or again, war is a very big kind of, so we go into Iraq and Afghanistan and kill the people and take their assets. All these things lower the value of life and offset as a financial matter the monetary inflation created. Now, let's go back to what Ben said. Ben said, I'm going to keep on printing until unemployment comes down. Well, we know quite the opposite is true. The way that monetary inflation has been set off is, in fact, by devaluing labor. And when you're talking about the most aggressive round of quantitative easing that we've seen, then what you're going to need to see going forward is several more rounds of labor deflation. Well, what could that look like? Union busting. We've seen the efforts across the squabble in Wisconsin and in other states to really start to make headway against the state and local unions. We're watching, again, the unfolding of the drama on American Airlines this week as the unions and retirement agreements are abrogated or changed or essentially busted. Talk of the fiscal cliff next year is going to involve sort of the draining or debasing of retirement benefits. And certainly in the case of someone like American Airlines, the abrogation. More technology is scheduled to come out that could have dramatic impact on the value of labor that does things that now can be replaced by robotics or other machines. It's going to increase the value of labor that's needed, skilled labor that's going to need to work with the new tools. And of course, depopulation again, because depopulation limits the pressure on natural resources and goods and services. It lowers the price of tangibles. And that's why our conversation with Jeffrey Smith and watching his new DVD, which I can't recommend to you enough, about GMOs is so important, because GMOs has the ability, I think, to dramatically impact the health and the fertility of generations yet to come. Don't underestimate the power of the system to offset monetary inflation with labor deflation. That's how they've been getting the slow and steady slow burn. And it's been quite amazing, because there are several commentators who I respect tremendously who have not yet seen that and keep predicting a hyperinflation, and the hyperinflation never comes. Now, the challenge is if we get suddenly a burst of inflation running up, or the labor deflation spiraling down towards a collapse, what you can do if the managers of the system don't feel that they can continue to manage, you can get a shift to war. War happens when the slow, steady process, when the slow burn can't be managed, and that's what sort of brings the system back into the controlled equilibrium. The GMO issue is important as well, because of the need, as you've probably heard me say, the need for assets to back a global digital currency. Where the central bankers want to go is they want to go to digital currencies. And to do that, they're going to need, with the changes in technology impacting energy, they're going to need an asset to replace oil. And as I discussed with Jeffrey Smith tonight, I think genetically modified seed and food gives them the ability to do that. And I think it's one of the reasons that the pressure is so enormous to get a global GMO system that gives control of the food supply to a few corporations. My article, again, QE3, if you're in the real estate market, you need to pay attention, got a very good response. It's up at Daily Bell and Scoop, Patrick.net, a variety of other places. I encourage you to read it. What does this all mean to you? Let me just quickly run through it. What QE3 means is that your dollar deposits and fixed income securities are going to drop in purchasing value. Obviously, if you have a $100,000 CD, it's not going to go down. But $100,000 is going to buy you less. I had two posts that I asked Justin, our production assistant, to post up under subscriber links in the blog post. One is called Positioning Your Assets. Another is called Positioning Your Assets. Is your community losing $3.3 billion? What I do is I take the period 2003 to 2008 and I walk through a family of four in the San Francisco Bay Area and show you how much they lose in purchasing power as a result of this kind of monetary policy. So in 2008, what I show is that they've lost the equivalent of $250,000 in 2008 dollars. I then take a community of 100,000 and walk through all the dollar deposits sitting throughout the community and count it up and show that that community has lost $3.3 billion of purchasing power when measured in 2008 dollars. So this is a very important issue for both individuals, for households, and for communities in general, because essentially the system is harvesting the people economically by debasing their deposits, and so the deposits ends up being very cheap financing to the system. Anybody who's got a lot of dollar deposits in the bank and is getting a yield of 0.25% to 0.5%, I'm sure understands what I mean. Expect essential expenses to rise. Expect food prices to rise. Tangibles are likely to rise, such as precious metals, as Ben announced, as QE3 was anticipated. And then after it was announced, we've seen precious metals come up a lot, as Franklin Sanders and I discussed last week. The stock market has been supported by this in the short run. The Dow has not closed down 1% or more in nearly 3 months. That's 61 sessions. That's the longest stretch of sort of up period in almost 6 years. It's likely, given what's happening with earnings, that the North American stock markets can't continue to outperform the rest of the world. And if anything, we're probably in for a turn. But the reality is the stock market represents tangibles one way or another. And so the place that's going to have a tough time on this is the bond market. We've seen Bernanke say he wants to keep yields down essentially next to nothing till 2015. So it's hard to believe that bonds, it's hard to see where they go below the basement here. The real estate that my QE3 article that's posted up on the blog and has been republished around the internet, I talk about what this means to you if you're in the real estate market, and I think that's important. Again, the $64,000 question is, will they flow through some of the money to people in the middle of workouts or foreclosures? Let's hope the answer is yes. But if you're in the middle of a workout or a foreclosure, you definitely want to pay attention and see if you can be the beneficiary of this big change in policy, because it's likely that your servicer or your securitizer or your bank may be the beneficiary and may be under orders to pass some through, particularly in an election year. We're seeing all over the country refinancings at even more attractive yields. So if you're in a position to refinance, you may want to do it. Finally, if you're in the market for real estate, I think there is a very significant chance, if the Fed succeeds in clearing the market, that we're going to start to see very significant dollars moving in from offshore into both residential and commercial real estate and land and farmland, particularly next year. What that means in terms of prices, still a question mark, because we have the fiscal cliff negotiation in the federal budget to go through. But I suspect if the fiscal cliff gives us one last good round of price drops or attractive price levels, once that's over, big money is going to be accumulating in this process. Finally, what it means is that Romney is probably dead on arrival in terms of any chance of winning the presidential election. It clearly looks like the powers that be have decided that they'd rather go with Obama. This kind of quantitative easing puts Obama in a very, or the sitting president, in a very strong position against any contender. And if you look at some of the headlines on Romney this week, such as the leaked audio from a private presentation he did saying too many American people on the American on the government payroll, those kinds of things generally only happen when the top guys have decided, you know, it's time for this guy to die. I must admit, I agree with Romney that unfortunately too much of the economy is running through the federal government, but certainly the way he said it, you know, has to be one of the least astute political comments you could ever make, particularly when he talked about people not paying taxes. Romney certainly does not pay his fair share of taxes and hasn't for a long time. I keep encouraging the subscribers and the Soleri team to get interested in local politics. A wonderful piece up on the blog, check it out, by Gary Heckman, with a very distinguished career in the municipal sector. It's called Want to Have a Real Impact? Shift Your Time to State and Local Politics. I really want to get you interested. I just wrote in today for my absentee ballot. Just get interested in your local elections. Remember, it's much more important who your sheriff is than who your president is at this point. For those of you who may have accounts there, I just want to point out Morgan Stanley is getting hammered by more than it's getting hammered by the rating agencies, getting hammered by the courts, getting hammered across the board. If you have accounts there, you just want to take notice. They may have a rough period ahead of them. Finally, science and technology continues to dazzle. There are a couple pieces up on the blog I want to point out to you. One, bioengineering, just the headway they're making is incredible. An article from the New York Times about stem cells used, your own stem cells used to make organs, revolutionizing the transplant process. A skin gun, one of the most tragic and painful things for many people is the impact of burns and the time and the pain and the expense of trying to replace skin. There's a remarkable little video about something called the skin gun, example of how technology really can add tremendous value. And one of my favorite group that has figured out how to ship out a factory in a 20-foot container with enough tools to bring on an industrial revolution in a place that has no manufacturing capacity. Very heartwarming story. We've got some good questions this week on real estate, but I'm going to defer them to our next Soleri report because I want to introduce Jeffrey Smith. Our hero today, not surprisingly, is Jeffrey Smith. He's one of the most, he's certainly to me the most effective voice bringing transparency to the genetically modified organism issue, starting with his book Seeds of Deception and then following up with his book Genetic Roulette. Genetic Roulette is an amazing compendium of all the both experiential evidence and scientific research that indicates that genetically modified foods really are a threat to our health and our, and if you flow through to the what it does to the farming community, to the economy, and to freedom. He's remarkably effective. He's been networking and lobbying all over the world. And so without any further ado, let me play ask Justin to play the interview that I did with him at the beginning of the month. Okay, Justin, let it roll. Okay, here we go. Okay, well, Jeffrey Smith, I'm so delighted that you could join us on the Soleri Report, and I'm so delighted to finally get to meet you. I have been your admirer for many years, and one thing we do on the Soleri Report, every Soleri Report, we have a hero, and you will be the hero on the Soleri Report. You are one of my great heroes from the time I first read Seeds of Deception, which was when it first came out. And I just have to compliment you on a couple of things before we dive in. The first is one of the terrible time wasters that I see happen to people who are trying to bring transparency to a very important issue and bring change on something that's very, very important is they're constantly trapped into the dead end of trying to persuade, you know, the corporate media or the Right Foundation to support them, and they don't understand the importance of just going directly to the people. And it seems to me that you figured out very, very quickly, very, very early, that you had to basically build a business model that appealed directly to people. And I want to know how you figured that out so brilliantly.
Well, thank you. It's a very interesting question. I've never had that question framed like that in my life, and it's a delight to get a fresh new approach. what I figured out actually was that if you run the numbers on how do we get rid of GMOs, which I've done countless times, and I've traveled around the world, I've been to 34 countries, and I always ask campaigners what they did to fight GMOs, what worked, what didn't. What became obvious several years ago was the concept of a tipping point of consumer rejection and how absolutely leveraged it is when a small percentage of consumers avoid genetically modified foods in a particular market, particularly given that there are no consumer benefits. And so in Europe, 3 weeks after a biotech company projected a 95% replacement of all commercial seeds within 5 years, this was in January of 1999, 3 weeks later, a gag order was lifted on Dr. Arpad Pusztai, causing a media firestorm of coverage about the risks of GMOs, more than 700 articles written within a month, and within 10 weeks, the tipping point of consumer rejection took the biotech industry by complete surprise, when virtually the entire food industry in Europe committed to stop using GM ingredients in their European brands, where the tipping point had taken place. In the United States, we had a tipping point against bovine growth hormone kicked out of Walmart, Starbucks, Yoplait, most American dairies, when we informed consumers about the risk for cancer, especially in children, from the higher cancer-promoting hormone in the milk from cows treated with bovine growth hormone. So we actually estimate that as little as 5% of U.S. shoppers, or 15 million Americans, would be sufficient to kick GMOs out here with the same companies that already kicked GMOs out of Europe, so seeing a drop in market share that they can identify as resulting from anti-GMO sentiment. So if we're only going for 15 million Americans, we've got 28 million that buy organic on a regular basis. We have many more who are parents of young children. We have sick people. We have progressive doctors. We have religious people that think GMO means God move over. So we don't need mainstream media to get it out to everyone.
Right. Well, I couldn't agree more, and I'm always delighted to see somebody who embraced that. Now, let me step back and ask the first question. How in the world did you realize what was happening with genetically modified food and move into the position of being really arguably the most powerful voice in activism on this on the planet? How did you figure it out? How did you know?
Well, I went to a lecture by a molecular biologist in 1996 who spilled the beans. He basically explained that our science is not ready for genetically modified foods or crops. Our science is an infant science. It's taking baby steps. Everything we do causes side effects. We do not understand the DNA well enough. We do not understand genes well enough. To say that we can predictably and reliably manipulate the GMOs or the genes between species to protect the health of the environment is complete garbage. And he blew the whistle on his own industry, and no one was listening outside this small group. And I realized people need to hear this. And there's sufficient scientific evidence that if conveyed effectively, compellingly, convincingly, if it can go viral, then we could stop it simply by putting it into the networks of people who would listen. And so I was thinking it might be a rather quick thing if we could just get the word out to maybe evangelical Christians, maybe this group, maybe that group, who could realize what was going on and for whatever their purposes were to stop it. Now, it did not take a short period of time. It's still happening. But what happened was it didn't take the few minutes here and there that I was dedicating to it back in 1996. I became a vice president of marketing at a GMO detection laboratory and was reading all the information that was being written about in Europe and reading almost nothing about what was happening in the United States. And so there again, I said, there's so much compelling evidence and terrific stories of scientists that have been fired, regulatory agents that have been captured, epidemics that have been hidden. We should get the stories out to the Americans because they're not going to be interested in the science, but they'll be interested in the stories, and then weave the science and dangers into the stories. And so that became Seeds of Deception.
And what was the response to Seeds of Deception? When did it come out again?
It came out in 2003. It's the world's best-selling right. book on GMOs, but it's a small world. But it's still having an impact. I was in Taiwan in April, and I arrived as a guest of the press that published Seeds of Deception in Chinese 5 weeks earlier. And I said, how's the book doing? They said, it's a national bestseller in its third printing. And sure enough, it was already making waves. I gave a press conference with the former prime minister. He had read part of the book, was quoting from the book to the press, calling for a GMO-free zone. Congress people had read the book, and they had me come and do a press conference and a hearing in the Congress halls. And likewise, it has an impact. In fact, in Vermont, the book was given to all the legislators when they were considering passage of the first state regulation on GMOs, the requirement for labeling seeds as genetically modified. And it did pass, and a master's student did a thesis on the impact of the book on the vote, and it turned out that one person said that the book spread like wildfire and was the basis of every conversation on GMOs once it arrived. And it changed this guy's vote, it changed another person's vote. So when it was read by politicians, it had a big impact. But of course, politicians don't have much time, and so I usually, when I handed a book to a politician, I kind of wrote it off, figuring they would just put it on a shelf somewhere.
Well, although between your, because you just came out with a new book, Genetic Roulette, and you're about to come out with a documentary by the same title, Genetic Roulette, which I've seen, and by the way, is absolutely fantastic. It's just, I can't, it can be pre-ordered from your site, and I just have to tell everybody listening, you must go to Jeffrey's site and pre-order, get the book, but also pre-order the DVD, because it is not only when you're going to have, but when you're going to pass around. And between those two, you've done a lot of interviews and some very effective documentaries, and I know you have some of them available up on your site, but there's been a lot more through the documentary model and through the video. There's been a lot more communication. So you do, my impression is you do a tremendous amount of speeches and interviews.
Well, so yesterday I spent 2 hours with one documentary film crew, then an hour on the radio. And I do a lot of documentary interviews, a lot of radio interviews, a lot of interviews. I mean, usually maybe once a day when I'm in that mode, but oftentimes much more. When I go to another country, I did 44 media interviews in 10 days in Australia. So I do as much as I can that can fit into my schedule, and it is making a difference. I'll tell you,
Right.
I don't realize often how the non-GMO seeds germinate, but sometimes they get very big surprises. And I spoke at many medical conferences and asked the doctors to rate themselves before and after my talk on one case, how vigilant they've been at avoiding GMOs and how vigilant they plan to be, and on the second, how often they prescribe non-GMO diets and how often they plan to. And within 30 minutes or 40 minutes or an hour, depending on how long I'm speaking, virtually everyone in the audience has become a vigilant non-GMO eater and a vigilant prescriber of non-GMO diets. and it's actually, it holds, because I speak at the same conference like I did with the naturopaths and with the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, sometimes years later, and the physicians come up to me and say, I have a completely non-GMO household and I prescribe non-GMO diets to every patient. So that led me into interviews with patients, and it turns out they're getting better from a wide variety of problems. And that was very significant to understand. The other thing is that when I interviewed scientists for so many years, they're very cautious in their statements. You know, this
thing suggests
that converging lines of evidence appear to. But when I asked the doctors to comment on GMOs, they were unequivocal. They said GMOs cause inflammation. GMOs cause allergies. Everyone who gets non-GMO diets from me gets better. I mean, really strong statements that I realized, wow, I can quote these people now.
Well, let me turn to the new book, Genetic Roulette, because it's one of the challenges I have in trying to persuade people not to eat genetically modified food and to try and warn them of the dangers, you know, because they think, oh, well, this food is more expensive than this food. And I'm saying, no, this is food. This is poison. This is not food. And but Genetic Roulette, and I'll use my words and then turn it over to you, collects up a lot of the different research that is compelling and evidentiary research that is compelling as to the dangers of GMO food and GMO seed. And it's case after case after case. And it's also organized in a way that you can skim it or you can dive deeper if you want the detail. But there is an unbelievably comprehensive body of evidence that this stuff is really, really dangerous. And Genetic Roulette, just if anybody's on the fence, this is absolutely going to push them into that understanding that says, this is not food. This is not food.
Well, the book solved several problems for me. One was, as I said, when I gave Seeds of Deception out to the politicians and didn't think that they would ever have a chance to read it, I needed something that they could scan very quickly. So as you mentioned, the left side of every two-page spread is just a summary for the attention deficit politician, and the right side are detailed cited facts for the scientists and doctors and staff members to jump into. So it solved that problem. Second, I was being asked constantly every week by people from all over the world, can you summarize the health dangers for this meeting or for this politician or for this parliamentary committee? And so I was always just grabbing a bunch of stuff and putting it there, and I said, let's put it all in one book so that everything that's the most compelling evidence is there. And then third, there was a lot of different arguments from different scientists, and they had never been harmonized or put together in one place. And so that was kind of like herding cats. For 2 years, I was corresponding with over 30 scientists and experts, and I had every page of the book reviewed by at least 3 scientists. And there I had to choose which interpretation to put on the data, and I usually chose the most conservative one, in order to not give the opposition an opportunity to challenge it very easily. Now, of course, they came up with their own tobacco science and junk science website to try and challenge it, but it's absolutely complete disaster from a scientific standpoint. And Genetic Roulette does uphold the conclusion that GMOs are way not ready for prime time, are way dangerous, and are probably contributing to a significant amount of diseases and disorders in the U.S. population since they were introduced in 1996.
Well, when you bring it all together like that, it's very compelling, particularly when you realize how much, you know, if you look at the firepower that has been brought to bear in every situation to keep this information from seeing the light of day, you realize what an extraordinary effort there has been by a lot of very courageous scientists and farmers and everyone else to get the information across. So I know as you look across example after example after example, there's been tremendous courage to bring that all to the fore, and you feel it. Now, when did you start to make the documentary, and when is the documentary Genetic Roulette going to be available?
Well, it ships this week. So it's available essentially immediately, and the website to place an order is geneticroulettemovie.com. You know, I started filming all around the world as I traveled many years ago, and it wasn't until December that I realized I need to put something together, and I was originally going to be 20 minutes and then figured, well, let's make it 28 so that it can go on local access, and then I started putting more stuff, and, well, let's make it 58, and now it's 85, and that's after cutting a lot away. But I have footage there from India. I have a whole story about South Africa, which is absolutely devastating. I have interviews of physicians who prescribe non-GMO diets that I took years ago, 3-4 years ago, and I have interviews of parents of autistic kids that I took at Autism One 2.5 months ago, where they described how their autistic sons got better, either behaviorally or from the gastrointestinal disorders or both, when they switched to non-GMO food. So it's over a wide spectrum, different formats of the camera. You can see as you watch it, it's kind of all over the place in terms of there's a lot of donated footage, and we've had over 50 people volunteer to work on this. We have volunteers doing cartoons and motion graphics and great animations, and I think it's all come together very nicely.
My favorite part was all the different charts you show that show the introduction of GMO corn or GMO soy or GMO food into the food supply, and then disease after disease suddenly skyrocketing.
I'm so glad you said that, because the thing is, there's some people who like aren't into charts at all, and I said, no, this has to be in there. We had to cut out 5 charts, but there were 7 different charts showing it's almost as if they're bumping off the GM corn and shooting up as soon as the GMOs were introduced. And it's absolutely visually captivating for me that, yeah, right. People are getting sicker now.
Right. The evidence is overwhelming, and I'm not just, you know, that wasn't the only deterioration happening in the food supply, but that was the major one. And it's, you know, it really sort of knocks your socks off. And so I think between the book and the DVD, it brings everybody together in a way that is so accessible to anybody who's responsible to, you know, buy food for themselves or prepare food for a family. I mean, there's no mother that's going to see this that isn't going to be changed by the experience of watching it. So to me, you know, this is one of the ones you need to buy 10 and start giving them away to all your relatives as soon as you can.
I think you totally got my strategy here, because, you know, right now there's the labeling initiative in California for mandatory labeling of GMOs. And so we're releasing it in time for it to hopefully go viral and be picked up by lots of moms and everyone in California. We do have discounts for people to buy 6 or more, because a lot of people want to get this out to their friends and they want to see a tipping point of consumer rejection and believe that this can change behavior and have people avoiding GMOs by the time the movie ends. And so that's exactly, you picked up exactly right, why the movie was created.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because to me, the single most important thing we could do here in America between now and November is to get the referendum in California passed. So putting this in the hands of people in California is, believe it or not, I'm headed to California in September. So I will make sure everybody watches or gets a copy of this. Will they be able to rent it online or get it through Netflix, or do they need to pass the DVD around?
Right now it's not available online. It's only available as a DVD. We're going to have some kind of online presence towards the end of September, which will
Okay.
But right now, the DVD, one thing is that our Institute for Responsible Technology, I mean, we'd love to get this thing out for free, but we've run out of money and need to recoup some of the money that...
No. You'll never hear from Solari that you should do this for free.
No, we would like to... It's like we have so much free resources right now online. We have free... almost everything I've created, like in terms of movies, I have Hidden Dangers and Kids Meals free online, Your Milk on Drugs, Just Say No, free online, Everything You Have to Know About Dangerous Genetically Modified Foods, free online. We've got a companion disc in the DVD package from Genetic Roulette, which has a talk given to Andrew Weil's Integrative Medicine Conference of 900 physicians and practitioners, and we say, please make copies of this separate disc. And
can people come in and make donations so that you can give more out?
Oh, yeah. In fact, responsibletechnology.org, right now, Mercola.com is matching every single dollar given to either our nonprofit tax deductible or our political wing 501c4 for the Food Policy Fund, with a dollar going to the California Right to Know labeling campaign.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to that at the end, but obviously everything we can do to support, I'm going to use my blog and the updates and everything to try and help support this. So Now, I know you were just out at the Consciousness Beyond Chemtrails conference, and in fact, we had one of our production people say that they had watched your speech online and said it was absolutely fantastic. But I thought you could just take a minute and tell us how that conference was and what happened.
Well, it was an interesting combination of people there. And I gave a talk, and it was one of those huge theaters. It wasn't packed, but from the stage, the bright lights, you couldn't tell who was in the audience. And I gave one of those big stage speeches, which was a fun thing to give, totally different feel and energy than I'm used to giving. And they got a standing ovation, and people, you know, crowded me afterwards, and they were very moved by some of the messaging there. And from that, you know, larger audience space, a fresh voice came out in me where I talked about some of the spiritual qualities of what it's like to work on this issue. Because GMOs, because they self-propagate and permanently pollute the gene pool, and they affect all living beings because of their impact in the ecology, everyone who eats because it's in the food supply, and all future generations because it's irreversible, that it's a threat that is unprecedented in the history of the human race. And so right. The opportunity to help stop it is an opportunity to do greater good than anyone's ancestors has ever had the opportunity to do. And so stepping into that, knowing that that the fate of all living beings and all future generations is tied up with our success, it feels like the wind at our back, but it's more than the wind. It's an incredible organizing support. So that's how I ended, but that's not how the night ended. What I heard later, and it didn't happen with me, people got back to their cars and someone had slipped in under everyone's windshield wiper a note trying to say that Jeffrey Smith is a scam artist and that they should go to the industry's anti-GMO website where they had that junk science against genetic roulette for the real truth. Uh-huh. So I thought that was a great victory that they were concerned enough to try and pass out to people at this conference.
You know, it's very hard for most people to fathom that this is as really as bad as it is. You know, it's hard to fathom that so many different participants, from the government to corporations to the grocers associations and on and on and on, would allow something this evil and dangerous to happen. I remember when I live in Tennessee, and when I first moved from Washington to Tennessee, I would try and warn people. This is in a farming community, and they just would look me in the face and say, I can't fathom that this would, you know, that other human beings would do this, that this could possibly happen. And I think that's...
In Monsanto, there's a guy, a former Monsanto scientist, to underscore your point, his colleagues did safety studies on Monsanto's bovine growth hormone and tested the milk from injected cows, and they found it had such high levels of the cancer-promoting hormone that these three Monsanto scientists refused to drink milk thereafter unless it was organic. One bought his own cow. So you have a situation
right.
where they won't drink it, and yet they work for the company that sells it.
Right. It's frightening. I saw you know, the farmers in Tennessee, they would not sell the genetically modified corn at the farmer's market because they didn't want to poison their neighborhoods, but yet they're putting it in the food supply. You can't. So I wanted to bring one thing up to you, because one of the things I look at an awful lot is, what are the economics of this? And I know in genetic roulette, a lot of people are saying that they're doing this because they're making money. But I think it's a lot more than that. And I just wanted to give you one of my theories about how this relates to the current economic model. If you look at the people who've been sort of centralizing control of the financial system, one of their greatest challenges is that U.S. dollar is the reserve currency. And the reason that the U.S. dollar has been able to achieve that status, which is an enormous financial advantage to the people who govern it, and is that they control the asset, the trading, they control the sea lanes, they control the satellites, and so they control the trade in oil. But if you're going to bring in new energy technology, then you need an asset to replace that role. And the only one I can think of that could ever do that, in given where technology is going, is control of the seed and the food supply. That could give you the asset you need. And so I think you know, you look at the speed and the insistence coming top down from both government and corporations, particularly Monsanto, to do this. You're talking about a ferocious pressure to make this happen globally. And part of it, I think, is very much tied up with the need to replace oil as the asset backing the reserve and to make sure that they've got the assets in place they need to make sure they control the reserve currency. So I think this is a much more powerful issue than just control. I think they're playing for the whole financial model here.
I'm told that food is the most expensive traded commodity. There's more money in food trade than there is even in oil. I'm not sure if that's true, but it's interesting that the first Bush administration, had believed that the trade in genetically engineered crops would increase U.S. exports and U.S. domination of world food trade, and therefore instructed the FDA and USDA and EPA to promote biotechnology, so they fast-tracked it without any required safety studies and without any labeling, and put Monsanto's former attorney in charge of the FDA, who ignored the scientists' warnings. And it's an interesting thing that you mentioned, because even though it was an immediate failure and they lost U.S. exports to Europe and they shrunk U.S. soybean exports, and Canada lost its canola exports, even its honey exports, because it was contaminated with canola pollen, the U.S. didn't give up. Instead of saying, yep, it's right, a failure, we'll go back, they just doubled down and have been trying to bully countries around the world, as revealed by WikiLeaks, for example, how the ambassadors to other countries from the U.S. act as Monsanto's minions and try and force pain on other countries. That's a quote, cause some pain on countries that are resistant to GMOs or put pressure on Brussels, etc.
Well, the intellectual property, the ability to patent something. So if you can get all of the food supply patentable, that is all part of achieving that market share and control. So this is a very strategic attitude coming very much top down, and it's not just about making money, it's about geopolitical position and control of the reserve currency. I mean, it's a
years ago when countries wanted to have advice about intellectual property rights and establishing them, they'd sometimes contact the U.S. and the U.S. says, okay, we'll send you an advisor. They'd summon someone who worked for Monsanto to advise other countries on their patent laws.
Right. This is, a lot of this is about strategic control. But if you look at the long-term plans of North America, one of them is to dominate agriculture. And they're, you know, that's one of the very big bets. So that's why California is, you know, I like to say you're up against all the money on the planet. But what's funny is if you look back through history, if, you know, there are those issues where Americans just sit up and say, no, you know, you can't, we turn into the mule, and one was homeschooling, one was swine flu. And I think this is going to be another one where, you know, the American people just say, nope, you know, because there's nothing, as Robin O'Brien says in your documentary, Genetic Roulette, there's nothing more powerful than a mother. And the thing I love about Genetic Roulette is it's going to reach the mothers. It's the first documentary I've seen on this issue.
That was originally how I was going to do it. It was just going to be a thing for parents, and we expanded it so parents were just one of many. But I often say that you just give the information to the tiger mom in the community and then get out of her way.
Right. So that's going to happen. Well, take us a second. What have you been seeing around the world that works? What is helping getting the consumers to switch their dollars to non-GMO food? Where is the market working?
Well, I think we have hard-hitting information right now, and I'll start in the United States. I did something at the ChemChill conference the second day, where I did a pre- and post-test showing of hands in terms of how vigilant people will be, and I was able to convert people to very strong non-GMO preferences in 3.5 minutes. Which is a personal record. I haven't even tried it before in terms of a large group. But that's because The information is so compelling. And I had to just share a couple of things. three things. One, the BT toxin produced in the corn is designed to break open the stomach of insects and kill them by boring little holes in the cell walls, causing little holes and leakage. And the biotech industry claimed that it had no impact on human cells and was destroyed during digestion, but published peer-reviewed studies in the last year show that it does poke holes in human cells and it does get into the bloodstream of pregnant women and their children. And so now we are eating and possibly producing inside our own intestinal flora a toxin that drills holes in human cells that's considered an allergen and that ends up inside the blood of fetuses and possibly in their brain because they have no intact blood-brain barrier. So that one thing there is very high on the yuck factor and drives people away from the corn. Then we have the soybeans and other products that are genetically engineered with Roundup-ready genes, allowing them to be sprayed with Roundup. But the Roundup is now linked to cancer, birth defects, endocrine disruption, and reproductive disorders, Parkinson's, etc. So the rodents that have been eating Roundup-ready crops in the laboratory animals have had damage to their testicles, uterus, ovaries, DNA function differently in the embryo offspring. Most of the offspring of female rats fed GM soy died within 3 weeks. Hamsters by the third generation lost the ability to have babies or have hair growing in their mouths. Really serious stuff. So that's the second piece which we could elaborate on, and that is the Roundup issue. And then the third is this, that the same disorders seen in laboratory animals and identified by the American Academy of Environmental Medicine as reproductive disorders, immune system problems, and gastrointestinal problems, principally, as well as accelerated aging, organ damage, and insulin and cholesterol dysfunction, these same problems are improving in the pets, livestock, and humans that get off of GMOs, and these same disorders are getting worse in the general population since GMOs were introduced. So you have the correlational evidence, and then you have the theoretical reasons why GMOs might be causing these same problems. Because, for example, if BT toxin is causing leaky gut is linked to to cancer and Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and maybe autism, as well as inflammation, autoimmune disease, and food allergies, all of which are on the rise.
Well, you know, I love that expression, the yuck factor. That's exactly what we need to do. We need to radically increase the yuck factor on this stuff. Okay, so
in other countries, it's very different. In India, it wasn't such a consumer issue. It was more of a farmer issue because they were raising cotton. But about 200,000 cotton farmers that planted BT toxin-promoting cotton plants were unable to pay back their high-interest loans and committed suicide. And so a 200,000 people suicide, it's an absolute genocide. That is now forcing farmers to wake up and overcome the lies and disinformation by Monsanto there. But also a movie was created based on Genetic Roulette, the book, by a top Bollywood producer who narrated it. There's only 30 minutes, called Poison on the Platter, but it was the most important and talked about film in the country when it was released a couple of years ago, and that galvanized support against the introduction of genetically engineered eggplant. And so when they had the protest, 100,000 people fasted against the eggplant on Gandhi Day, and 8,000 people showed up at seven testimonial places for the Minister of Environment to hear people's responses, that kind of shook the government big time, and they decided not to approve the genetically modified eggplant.
Have you ever seen the Sir James Goldsmith interview with Charlie Rose in 1994?
No, I haven't.
Okay, I'm going to send that to you. Sir James Goldsmith, you know, he was a grocer. He ran Hanson's. Took time off from his business career, ran for parliament because he said that the adoption of the Uruguay rounds and the plan to organize and centralize the food and agriculture on planet Earth was absolutely insane. It was just, you know, it was gonna move 2 to 3 billion people off the land. It was gonna commit genocide on an unprecedented scale. He was one of the early opposers to GMO food, and it's one of the reasons I really encourage people to watch it is it makes it clear it was a plan. This is not an accident.
I was talking to an activist in Poland who was testifying before the European Commission trying to get them to relinquish the farming plan for Poland. He said this is going to drive small farmers off the land just as it did in Portugal. And he was responded to by saying, but don't you know that was intentional? This is part of the plan. Yeah.
Right, right. And he describes, you know, the economic and human insanity of it. And it's very compelling, so I'm going to send it to you. Okay, so we know you have to go, but before we finish, please just walk us through your websites and describe to us what we can do to stay current on what Jeffrey Smith is doing and your organizations and what we can do to support your efforts.
Great, thank you so much. So if for people who want to avoid GMOs, we make it as easy as possible without labeling by our own shopping guide called non-GMOshoppingguide.com. So if you go there, you can see about 4,000 products that have been third-party verified by another organization, the Non-GMO Project. For those with iPhones and iPads, we have the free iPhone application Shop No GMO, Shop No GMO. And if anyone wants to program a droid for us, we'll do that as well. We have responsibletechnology.org. There you can sign up for Spilling the Beans newsletter, which is free. It just went out today. It goes out every 1 to 3 weeks, and it keeps people up to date on the news. It tells them how they can do action alerts and tells them kind of where I am and what opportunities there are. So we also have a Tipping Point network where people can join with people with others in their areas for community effective activism. And also nationally, for people who want to become speakers on GMOs, we've taught about 800 people with an 8 to 10 hour online course. And so people can take that and sign up for that. We're also on Facebook. We also have Twitter. And for products, you can go to seedsofdeception.com. And that's named after my first book, Seeds of Deception. And then the movie website, which is just up now, called GeneticRouletteMovie.com. There you can see the trailer, make purchases, even at a discount for multiple copies, and that way people can get that information out quickly. Right now we have a donation plan for people who want to make a donation to the Institute for Responsible Technology or our Food Policy Fund, which is foodpolicyfund.org. That's Food Policy Fund is not tax-deductible donation. It's for political action. But IRT, or Institute for Responsible Technology, at responsibletechnology.org is tax-deductible. But either way, any donation now will be matched dollar for dollar, with dollars going to the California Labeling Right to Know campaign by Mercola.com. So it's an opportunity to leverage your donations to help pass Prop 37 in California. I'm in California right now. I spent 2 weeks here in July, 2 weeks in August, and I'll be camping out here September and October so that we can do whatever we can to support the educational efforts going on so people know what are GMOs and why they should be avoiding them and what labeling means to them.
Well, Jeffrey Smith, we can't thank you enough for joining us on the Soleri Report. I will also be in California this fall if there's anything I can do to support you and your efforts when I'm out there. I'm only an email away, so let me know, okay?
Sounds terrific. Let's think of something.
Okay. Have a great day.
Thank you, too.
Justin? Okay, so Jeffrey Smith, a couple things I want to point out from that, our discussion. I kept referring to his book, Genetic Roulette, as being new. It was published in 2007, and one really smart subscriber pointed out to me, it's not new. But actually, it's new. It's newer than Seeds of Deception, is what I was thinking. Again, his DVD, Genetic Roulette, is available for free this week. We link to it from the blog post. I'm sure you can pick it up on a search. Last week when we did the Precious Metals Market Report with Franklin Sanders, I talked to our movie, and let's go to the movies, was Michael Murphy, Why Are They Spraying? And I must tell you, if you want to understand genetically modified food and the push to adopt genetically modified food, it is much easier to understand if you watch both Jeffrey Smith's DVD and Michael Murphy's Why Are They Spraying, which is available on the internet for free, We had it up on the blog. You can watch it or link to it from last week's Solari report. So I cannot recommend strongly enough watching those two, particularly in tandem. So that's it for this week. Coming up next week, we have John Rappaport's pre-recorded monthly Solari report. This month it's called A Case Study in Invented Reality. I know you'll enjoy it. Then on October 1st, I'm back with Equity Markets Overview with my partner Chuck Gibson. We're doing those 1 1/4. Equity markets, a lot to talk about. And then back with Franklin Sanders on October 11th for Precious Metals Market Report. I'll be back with Franklin in Tennessee for the Transformation and Renewals Conference. It will follow that weekend. So we'll be doing Precious Metals Market Report Thursday night, and then Transformation and Renewals starts Friday and Saturday. And then October 18th, the 3rd quarter wrap-up. It's been a busy 3rd quarter. It's going to be a very busy 4th quarter, so that will be a goodie. So until I'm back on October 4th, enjoy John Rappaport. I look forward to talking with you with partner Chuck Gibson. And until then, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.